This episode is sponsored by our good friends at Kilns College. Can encountering God through your creative process change the world? Absolutely. Kilns College offers an affordable one-year online graduate certificate in theology, arts, and culture. Connect with creatives from all over the world exploring restorative justice through the arts. Visit kilnscollege.org to learn more.
There's a storm out on life's ocean, and it's proving this away.
Liz Vice is a singer-songwriter best known for her gospel, soul, and R&B roots. In her latest release, titled Save Me, Liz breaks the mold of any one particular genre and explores a wide range of new musical territories. In this episode, I talk with Liz about her creative process and the vulnerability present within her songs. Be sure to check the show notes of this episode for links to connect with Liz and for tickets to our 2019 The Breath in the Clay Creative Arts Gathering. This is my conversation with singer-songwriter Liz Vice.
If your soul's not anchored in Jesus, you're gonna surely drift away. If your soul's not anchored in Jesus,
Liz, thank you so much for joining me on Makers and Mystics. I'm excited to talk to you and get to know you a bit.
Of course. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I've been tracking with your new record that you just put out this year and so enjoying what you've done on this album.
Thank you so much.
When did that record come out?
June 1st of this year.
Yeah, just a few months then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really love it, and just love the blend of genres and styles that you're working in, and
yeah,
just love the heart behind it and all that you're doing.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to start our time together and dig into a bit of your own background and some of your own musical influences.
Yeah.
What are some of your first experiences with music? You seem to have such a rich tradition that you're coming from. I'd love to know what some of your initial experiences or influences in music were.
Well, one, I never thought I would be a musician. So that always is like a wham. And most people are like, what? So my family's from LA. I was born there. Don't tell Portlanders. I was born there and I lived in Portland, Oregon. And my mom, she raised five kids on her own. And so when she was in LA, she was in that Hollywood music lifestyle, and my dad was in a band. I didn't grow up with my dad, but he was in a band in the 70s and 80s, and my mom, she was aspiring to be a singer, but she grew up in a home where my grandma was pretty conservative, and so it was all about, no, you need to learn how to be a secretary and get married and have kids. And so my mom wanted to do both, but that lifestyle, I mean, even just the little that I'm in, is tough. And so she wanted to start all over and move to Portland because my aunt moved here. And so as the middle child, I would go into the basement for hours and just listen to music from movie soundtracks. I love classical music. I love Disney. Little Mermaid was my jam until my sister hid the cassette tape. The Lion King. Like, I would go and I would sing these songs, and in private, it was nothing that I ever did in front of people. And as I got older, I wanted to work in film as an actress, but there weren't a lot of characters in the film industry or movies that I loved watching as a kid that looked like me. And so As I got older and I had some health issues between the ages of 15 to 22, I decided to go to film school to make the movies that I wanted to see, that my nieces and nephews could see characters that look like them. Mm-hmm. And I got offered a full-time, a full-ride scholarship to a university on the East Coast, and I turned it down. And that kind of opened the gates to me being available to sing on a church record. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll just do this and then go along and struggle and film, because now I'm in debt for the rest of my life. I'm on the 55-year plan. And I sang one song on a church record that we gave away for free. And it kind of opened the floodgates to people saying, I think that you're a musician. I think that, like, whether you do this for a living or not, like, a part of you was made to do this. I hated singing in front of people because it is so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I would rather give a speech than sing a song. And even when I started singing, I hated to banter because I was like, I don't know what to say between these songs. And I feel like an imposter being on stage, and maybe they'll find me out. And I don't know why I'm still doing music when I thought this was a one-off project.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of like a scattered way of telling my story of how I even got into music. But it was, I went to a church in Portland where the music, I'd never heard worship music like that. And it was so incredible that I felt this tug, just go sing background vocals. And I did that, and then it led to me singing a solo. I didn't even know I could sing like that. I had a little girl ask me, when did you know you knew how to sing? And I had never thought about it until that little girl asked me. And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. It's like, when did you realize you were breathing oxygen? I'm like, I have no clue. It just kind of happened.
Yeah. Was there a moment when you had a breakthrough concerning the stage fright that you mentioned? And if so, what was that like, and what helped you push past that fear?
Well, I don't think I'm there yet. Like, breakthrough. There are days where I wonder, well, when this all fades away, which I've been saying for 4 years, truly this will have to fade away at some point in my life. Like, I meet other musicians and I hear, like, and some of these people aren't touring or playing venues like I've been invited to, but I hear this, I know that I'm supposed to do this. I've been doing this since I was 10 years old. I'm a songwriter, I'm a singer, I'm a musician. This is what I want to do. I want to tour. I love doing this and that. And I'm just like, I don't even know how I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And my second record, it felt the same way I felt to sing on the worship team, that little nudge. When people said, Liz, after they heard my first record, when are you going to make another record? And I'm like thinking, another record. I'm waiting for this to end. And then my answer would be, well, I'll make another record if God gives me something to say. Mm-hmm. Yahweh, the creator, where all these songs are floating constantly. When I reach up and pull something down, when he gives me that thing, that's when I'll make another record. Mm-hmm. And he has a way of pursuing me where I envision myself like Saul, when King Saul is called to be king and Samuel wants to anoint him. And what does Saul do? He goes and hides, but he's so tall, his feet are still sticking out of this hiding space. And so I thought, oh, when I move to New York, I have to start all over with music community, with bandmates. It'll end. I'll work at a coffee shop or be a nanny. I'll lead worship at this church. And then maybe I'll be able to move to England for a little while, or France. And I don't know what I'll do. Maybe I'll make coffee or work at a bakery. And no, that didn't happen. So there are days when, I don't know. There are a lot of moments where I think, I can't keep doing this. This is too much of a task. It's bigger than performing. Mm-hmm. I go into these spaces where people would never step foot in the church, and I tell my story. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, why is it so different from your first record where it was so overt and gospel? And I'm like, because I wrote my second record, and this is the life that I've led, the life that I have experienced, which is hardship, which is pain. Mm-hmm. But what did I learn coming out of that pain? Or I've learned there is a level of faith and hope that only pain can bring you to. And so, I mean, I don't know. I honestly had someone ask me, what do I hope my breakthrough in music will be? And I was like, Well, I feel like music is literally on the tip of my fingers, and it could end at any moment. Mm-hmm. And so I say yes to things, and I say no to things. But the yeses have led me to doing music 4 years later. Mm-hmm. So I don't know mm-hmm. what's happening. Yeah. I don't know what this breakthrough is. I want to love doing this. But I think the tension of what am I doing keeps me open to, this person needed to hear that, or, this is what you meant by going into spaces that are uncomfortable to not save, I can't save, but to remind people that they're seen and that they're heard. And that their voice matters, mm-hmm. even though I struggle to believe that for myself. And then other people say, you know, Liz, I've gone through something very similar to that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being vulnerable. I don't know if that's the breakthrough moment. You would think that I would say, oh, duh, this is why I'm a musician. I'm like, maybe music is just the catalyst to allow me to really understand why I believe the things that I believe. You have heard about who I am, says Jesus, but who do you say that I am? And I have realized that I have allowed myself to dwindle the gospel down to a tiny box, to dwindle church to a building, and to dwindle freedom to something that's actually, I don't know. I'm still learning. Freedom feels risky. Am I willing to go into places that some Christian would say, that's not a Christ-like place to be? To go into places that are so close to the other, to the enemy, that I would be confused as one. And that, maybe that's the breakthrough. Not so much music, because I could lose my voice at any moment. But the experiences that I have that snatch me from my comfort zone every day gives me an insight to humanity and not this division of us versus them. It's like, if I truly believe in this Yahweh, who is the creator of all life, then I can love this person who doesn't know Jesus as someone who has been created by Yahweh. Mm-hmm. So I think my breakthrough in music is bigger than a melody and a poem, which is really scary and really uncomfortable. And I want to run all the time. And then my feet stick out and I'm like, you found me. Don't make me do this anymore, please.
I can clean up really nice when I need to. I'm no princess, crystal slippers ain't my thing. I'm a lady like a lady, elegant like my father made me. Oh, I feel so fancy when my feet are running wild and free. Oh, I feel so fancy when my feet are running wild and free.
Just hearing you talk about this and just listening to the songs that come out of this place, it's like, just think the beauty of that authenticity and that humility of embodying your story. That's the attractiveness of the gospel. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I love so much what you're doing, because it's not confined to a particular subculture of people, but it's you're embodying your story. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be an effortless grace from the perspective of the listener. And so I think the embodiment that you carry is really a beacon to so many artists, and I take great inspiration from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd how much, even when I worked in film, like I would work on sets that people wouldn't say, oh, that's a Christ-like set. I'm like, I don't really want to watch Christian movies because sometimes they suck. And that's not real life. Sometimes stories are like French movies and they don't have a happy ending. A lot of times. And so, yeah, there's a lot of, oh, I want to be like everyone else because it's safe. I want to be like everyone else because then I don't have to explain myself or stick out. Where I've realized that our story is sometimes a guidepost for people who've lost their way or lost the ability to articulate a chapter in their life or something that they've gone through. And there are times where I say things on stage that people say, wow, that really encouraged me, but I don't realize what I said. And sometimes I wonder, do I actually believe what I just said? Like, do I really allow myself the freedom to love people well? Because in church, it's all about love, love, love. But then when it comes to loving someone you've been told is the other, that's when, are you backsliding? Well, you know, you're not supposed to hang out with those people. Am I right? And I look at Jesus's life and he was killed for the people he ate with. Like right away, he did not live very long. And I wonder, like, why do I get so caught up if someone who says that they're a Christian challenges my story, which is sometimes sad and sometimes a little too real? Why would I think that I would be treated any differently if God embodied Jesus Christ was killed for not dancing to the flutes and the music that the religious leaders wanted him to? Why would I be any different if the landlord's son was murdered? I'm like, oh gosh. I just want to hide and be like everyone else because it's easier and it's safe, but God has not called us to live a life of safety.
Come on.
Which is easier said than done. But I had a friend, like, people will see my life and I'm like, oh, I want to quit. But one of my PR people, she said, you know, people go to ballets and they see these ballerinas and they are gliding across the stage so gracefully. But no one sees the toes in the shoes. They don't see the diet they have to be on, the stretching and the abuse they have to do to their body. And ballerinas' careers don't last very long because of the intense amount of training and discipline that goes into sustaining this craft. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll keep doing this. Yeah, it's a challenge for sure.
You talked about how filmmaking and even a desire for going into acting was a part of your earlier creative development. And when I listen to your music, I can hear that cinematic sound. And so I'm curious if some of that filmmaking finds its way into your songwriting.
Oh, definitely. Like even if you listen to the song To Dance With Death, the revelation of this character that I saw from a distance comes later into the story of that song. And I try my best to give each character a different voice. Like even when I speak about how God stepped into this story and swooped me out of the hands of death, that he himself speaks. And I want that character to have a separate voice from me, the storyteller. If I can see a story unfold, I myself can relate to it better. And I still think about making movies But right now I get to tell stories differently. And now I am, like, I'm both. I'm the writer and I'm the director and I'm the talent. But the one thing is that when I step on stage, I don't become a different character. It feels like when I step on stage, any walls that I have up that keep me from letting people see me has to come down, or the songs don't work. The songs, you can hear it. It's hard to fake it when you sing. So that rawness, that vulnerability, that willingness to be a living sacrifice in front of people, to bare myself, is very different from filmmaking, but the songs are written in a way that hopefully tell a story.
Tell me about the song Brick by Brick.
Yeah, so I wrote that song with my friend Micah Bornay, who is a poet. Oh my gosh, he's a poet. And if I were to compare him to the prophets of the scripture, I would say that he is very prophetic in his way of of poetry and the way of speaking and the way of seeing the world. And so if you listen to the end of this track, you hear a protest and these people are chanting, "These are our streets. These are our streets." And that comes from a live video of the protest outside of the Portland International Airport when there was a ban on certain countries from entering in to the United States. And so you have that. And then after I tell people that, I can feel the heat in the room rise and I'm like, it's okay. This isn't a political argument. This isn't of the left or the right, because I'm neither. My politics are not of this world.
Come on.
So that, you know, when we had the first ban on people entering into the United States, people were upset, which is rightfully so. Then you cut to the march in Charlottesville, where a group of white supremacist people who were told their whole lives that these said brown people were the enemy and that they would come and replace them. They decided to gather together and have a march of their own. And they chanted, "Jews will not replace us. Jews will not replace us. They will not replace us. They will not replace us." And the thing that broke my heart is that they believed that they were replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like when you strip away the image of the people in Charlottesville and the people who are protesting outside of the airport, you can't tell who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. And so tell me how much more a legion of the pure with beauty and the truth can bring. We are so divided and everything is so polarized that there is no middle ground to sit. Let's have a meal together, Zacchaeus. I know what you do. You're ripping people off. You're taking more money for yourself. I'm going to come to your house and eat a meal with you. You're seen and you're heard. And I want to know why you believe you're replaceable. Now this goes to the people in Charlottesville. And so that song is just like, one bad apple spoils the bunch. And I think people are so hungry to have something to hold on to that they're willing to divide. They're willing to have sameness, which is not the same as unity. And so it's like people, we're ripping each other to shreds. We are creating our own hell. So it's kind of like this wake-up call to even Christians. It's not us versus them. We're all created beings by Yahweh, the life giver. But there is a very present evil amongst us that can use people, but that person is not an embodiment of evil themselves, because they too have a story of why they behave the way they do. And the only way we're gonna get to that point is by taking the wall down brick by brick. Every time I sing that song, I have people raise their arms and put it around their neighbor. I want us to break this bubble down. Even in the church, it's like, we are so consumed with, and that person's not saved. It's like, well, Jesus does say there are people who do things in his name and he has no idea who they are. And I had a friend say, we are not called to judge someone's heart, but we can judge someone's idea. And sometimes people have really bad ideas. And if you look at the life of Jesus, he is constantly going to the religious people and saying, you have heard the scriptures preached like this, but I tell you the truth. This is God. God goes into the outskirts and meets people where they are and speaks their language to connect with them where they are. And I'm still learning that. And it's so uncomfortable because a schedule, and I go to church on Sunday, go to Bible study on Wednesday. I read this Bible verse. I do this Bible study. It's easier because it doesn't take risk of, oh, I have to engage with that person who doesn't believe what I believe. So how do I convince them to come to church? It's like, no, come on, y'all. It's not about bringing them to us. It's about heaven invading earth. And I'm like, really, God, you want to use me? Sometimes I don't even know if you're real. I don't know how prayer works. I don't feel like talking to you. My moans and groans have to speak because I'm like, I'm done. I'm tired. I'm dust. And it's like, are you willing? Are you available? Crooked sticks to make straight lines. It's like, ugh, I guess so.
Yeah. That's so good, Liz. You done took me to church here today. Well, you have so many cross genres on this record. It's like, you know, I hear the gospel roots, I hear R&B, but then I hear some super experimental stuff, especially the song, Where Can I Go?
Oh, yes.
You know, it's just so experimental. I just love how you've really just innovated by bringing together all these different sounds and diversity of backgrounds. I love it.
Yeah, Where Can I Go? I told that story of that song for the first time last month when I was on tour with Propaganda. So the melody came from a dream, and I still have it recorded on my phone. Like, I was singing this melody in my dream, and I woke up at like 2 or 3 in the morning and rolled over and recorded it on my phone. Like, very poorly. I was like, where can I go? And then I was asked to do a worship leading job in New York City. And I said no for a year. And the pastor was like, I know you're supposed to be here. And I remember the night that I said yes to this job. And I had had some drinks with some friends. And we were in the back of his car, and I started singing, I'ma go spread my wings, I'ma go fly, I'ma go fly so high. And we all started singing that. And so what I realized is that I had been praying to live in New York City for a long time. But when I was sick at the age of 19, I didn't think I would live past the age of 21. And I made this bucket list. I also wrote an Oscar speech, but I made this bucket list. And number one on my list, even though I had no hope to live past 21, I made this bucket list anyway. Just in case I live through this season, I want to go to New York City. New York was number one. And so this song represents a dream that I had that came together with a reality. So this hope fulfilled. And I wanted it to be the last track on my record to say the story is continuing. That like, I'm gonna go spread my wings and be free. And you're gonna come with me. Cause there's nowhere else I can go to run from you, which is the from the Psalm of David. So it's like that inner conflict of like, I want to do my own thing, but God is there. He gives me this freedom, but he's still there with me. So yeah, alcohol mixed with a dream.
Sounds like beautiful art.
I'm like, well, a lot of artists are very complex human beings.
That's right. Well, Liz, thank you so much for taking this time to talk with me.
Yeah, thanks for your interest in my story that's still unfolding. And I have no idea what's going to happen. But until then,
Thank you so much for listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Makers and Mystics. And if you'd like to join our creative collective, you can find us at patreon.com/makersandmystics. We'll see you again next week.